Hello, this is Paul Saunders with the Center for the National Interest, back again with the Three Questions podcast. As many who listen regularly may know, the Russia-Ukraine war and the Russia-U.S. relationship have been long-term interests of mine. So I thought today I would again just talk myself and answer three questions about the latest developments there, including President Trump's discussion of providing Tomahawk missiles to Ukraine and recent conversations between President Trump and his Russian and Ukrainian counterparts. So the first question, the Tomahawks. These are, of course, land-based cruise missiles derived from what was originally a sea-based system. Ukraine has been asking the United States for them because they are a very long-range system relative to other things that Ukraine currently has. It would allow Ukraine to strike deeper targets. The president, over the course of the last few weeks, has been hinting that he might provide the missiles to Ukraine, but in recent days seems to have stepped away from that. So the first question for myself here, and I hope that my answer may have some value, is, you know, what is the president doing here? Is he going to provide the Tomahawks or not? What's going on? My view since this issue first came up is that President Trump actually is quite unlikely to do that, to provide the Tomahawk system to Ukraine. And there are, in my view, two fundamental reasons for that. One is that the United States actually has very few of these systems. We have a lot of Tomahawk missiles, generally, I think over 4,000 from what I understand, because this is something, you know, again, that the U.S. has been using for a long time as a sea-based missile, but the land-based version of it is a little bit newer, and the number of batteries capable of launching it is still rather small. So for the there are some systems being manufactured in the pipeline, but, you know, again, it's going to take a few years, I think between 1 and 3 years, for those to come online. So the first reason that I thought that it was pretty unlikely, actually, that the president would ultimately give the Tomahawks to Ukraine is that actually it would be pretty difficult for the United States to do that, given America's other military commitments and threats to the United States directly. But, you know, the second more important reason that I've been really skeptical of that, and frankly, why I wasn't too surprised to see the president sort of edging away from his earlier suggestion that he might provide the Tomahawks, is for the president, I think the question of providing these missiles has been much more about creating leverage in this sort of multiple direction negotiation that he's trying to conduct with Russia, with Ukraine, and to a lesser extent so far with America's European allies. And in this case specifically, I think the president was really trying to use the threat to provide the Tomahawks as leverage in another conversation with Putin to try to press Putin for further concessions. And as it turned out, you know, he had a phone call with Putin. He has reportedly scheduled a meeting with Putin in Hungary coming up in a couple of weeks or so. Having accomplished that, the president appears to have stepped back from the suggestion that he would provide the Tomahawks to Ukraine. Second question, again, kind of pursuing the Tomahawks here, is, has the president's strategy for using the Tomahawks for leverage, did it work? And there, I think there are two ways of answering that question. I already suggested in talking about his, what I view as his strategy for using the tomahawks, I made the observation that, you know, he seemed to want another crack at Putin, and he seems to have gotten one. So from that relatively narrow perspective, and this is the first way of answering the question, you know, President Trump's strategy seems to have succeeded. The broader question, though, of course, you know, when you ask, did it work, is, you know, is that episode going to move us any closer to some kind of a negotiated settlement to the conflict? And, you know, there it looks like this effort to use the tomahawks as leverage to drive the negotiations forward and to get another meeting, it's a little bit less clear, really, that that's likely to work. The president reportedly spoke to Putin in recent days. Russia's president reportedly is kind of willing to pursue a negotiated settlement that's based on Ukraine turning over territory that Russia hasn't yet managed to conquer militarily in two regions of Ukraine, Donetsk and Luhansk, and, you know, to be sort of somewhat more flexible, Russia here I'm talking about, be somewhat more flexible in its sort of territorial claims in the two regions to the south of that, where fighting is also underway. But this, for Ukraine at least, so far, has really been a non-starter. I think the Ukrainian government, you know, first and foremost, has a kind of a negotiating position and a goal of winning back all its territory. But, you know, from a more practical perspective, if Ukraine were to make territorial concessions or to be prepared to agree to territorial concessions, it's not really clear why they would agree to give up territory that Moscow hasn't yet been able to take by force. Third question is, you know, how likely is this U.S.-Russia-Ukraine diplomacy to work? Is President Trump really going to be able to negotiate a settlement to the conflict? And there I would say, first of all, I think it's pretty unlikely that it'll work. Secondly, I think the president himself, you know, has fairly clearly acknowledged that the Russia-Ukraine dispute is harder than he expected it to be to resolve. And that to his surprise, it's kind of more challenging than the Israel-Gaza conflict, where the president has, at least so far, been able to pull together a ceasefire. The problem, I think, in the Russia-Ukraine dispute is that President Trump, you know, I think it's fairly clear, actually, that, first of all, that he sincerely wants to bring about peace. And secondly, that he really doesn't seem to understand why the two parties are still fighting. He seems to have a view on the Russian side that the war is just kind of too expensive and damaging to Russia, that it's not really sufficiently profitable, if you will, to justify continued fighting, you know, beyond, you know, what's happened already over the last 3.5 years. On the Ukrainian side, the president, President Trump, he seems to have the view that, and again, he's said this, you know, that Ukraine is in a weak position, doesn't, as he says, hold the cards, and is going to lose the conflict. And therefore, you know, from his point of view, Ukraine should kind of negotiate and take the best deal it can get. And as the two sides have kept fighting and fighting and fighting, you know, the president has at times even referred to the war as a senseless conflict. And I think it's fairly clear that from his perspective, it is. The challenge is that from the perspective of the Ukrainians and the Russians, it's not a senseless conflict. And in the case of Ukraine, Ukraine, of course, has been attacked and invaded by Russia, which is trying to take large portions of its territory, and which has other war aims, you know, including changing the nature of Ukraine's government, limiting Ukraine's ability to engage with other international partners, limiting Ukraine's future military capabilities, and other things that are pretty tough, actually, for most sovereign states to accept if they haven't been, you know, conclusively militarily defeated, which Ukraine has not been yet. From the Russian perspective, Moscow, you know, has articulated this view that Ukraine is a security threat to Russia, that Ukraine's relationship with NATO and the United States has been a security threat to Russia. President Putin said pretty explicitly to the Russian people that he launched the war because that was a situation that was only going to get worse in the future, and Russia needed to act now while it still could to address the threat. And those two views, I mean, the Ukrainian one and the Russian one, are really just irreconcilable, fundamentally irreconcilable as they currently stand. And, you know, things can change because President Trump sort of isn't wrong in his view that it's an extremely costly war for Russia. And he's also kind of not wrong in his view that Ukraine is in the weaker position, especially if he himself, as the president of the United States, isn't really willing to support Ukraine too much. And certainly his repeated statements that Ukraine is in a weak position kind of implies that he's not really willing to provide a lot of support. So that's how I see this situation. I see an irreconcilable conflict that President Trump is trying to resolve primarily by applying sort of, in the grand scheme of things, relatively modest pressure to each of the two sides. And it seems fairly clear that after the last several months that relatively modest pressure applied, you know, sequentially to the two sides isn't really bringing us a lot closer to a solution to the conflict. And I think the question for the president today is really the same question that has been confronting him on this policy since he came into office, which is, you know, what level of effort is he willing to make, and does he want the United States to make, really, to terminate the conflict in one way or another? And there are a lot of different things that he could do to end the conflict. He could, as many have called for, you know, provide much, much more assistance to Ukraine in the hope of really wearing Russia down and forcing Russia to give up. Or alternatively, you know, he could stop helping Ukraine and put a lot of pressure on Ukraine and the Europeans to give in to Russian demands. And there's a lot of space in between those two things. Then, of course, you know, there's a third broad option, which is to stop trying. And I think over the course of the next 6 months, that may be a direction to watch closely. Is the president losing interest in trying to resolve the conflict? Is he prepared to give up on that and to move on to other priorities? Thank you so much for listening. Again, this is Paul Saunders with the Center for the National Interest with the Three Questions podcast.